You're on Waiheke Radio. This is Island Life, and we're looking at local people's views and perspectives. And I've got Alex Stone and Alan.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I did get it right. I got Janet's name wrong before. That was terrible. We've got Alex Stone and Alan Knight in the studio here to talk. Well, to talk about the election campaign and how that's all gone. Good morning, guys.
Hi.
Good
how morning. Are you?
Right. So, well, we're in the midst of an election campaign, and sometimes when it gets to election year, it gets to January, and I have this feeling of dread, actually. Oh no, we're going to do that again. But what about you two?
I certainly had a feeling of dread with this one earlier in the year. But, of course, as it's developed, I think it's really been one of the most low-key elections that I've seen since I've been in the country. It's been overshadowed by the American election, of course, which is inevitable. It's probably the most significant American election of any of our lifetimes. And with it almost overrunning our one, I think it's no wonder that the parties here are actually struggling to make any headway against all the coverage from the States. But also, I think this election is unusual in that what we'll normally see every 3 years with the political parties is that they're struggling to get into power. Whereas I have a feeling with this election, it's the one that nobody really wants to win.
Yeah, I agree with you, Alan. It's like the hospital pass election. We don't want to look after this country for the next 3 years. It's not a pretty job.
Yeah. I can't see what's in it for Labour to get a fourth term, and I'm sure their party strategists must recognise that if they get another term now, they're going to go down a lot harder next time, and they'll be out of power for a lot longer. I mean, the longer you're in, the longer you're out is generally the rule. And I think the challenge for them this time round has been they've got to lose as gracefully as possible. And I think one of the biggest giveaways of that has got to be the visibility of Michael Cullen over the last few weeks. Now, if Labour really were serious about winning, they'd be saying, oh, we'd love to have Michael Cullen out on the campaign trail with us, but there's a financial crisis and he's busy dealing with it. And so we wouldn't have to listen to Michael Cullen, who, let's face it, I mean, even Labour supporters find him a bit much. Whereas, in fact, he's been quite conspicuous in the last few weeks, giving everyone that feeling of, do you know, I'm not going to miss him.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on that, Alan. I find this has been the most boring campaign. There's no humour involved. If the funniest thing has happened, that Helen Clark slipped and fell on a canteen floor, there's no humour around. So I think it behoves us to maybe give it some humour.
Well, I mean, one of the things I think about it is, you know, we've got one of the major parties saying it's all about trust. The other one saying it's all about change. Excuse me, what about policies?
Yes. they're all coming up a bit short on policy, really. And as for it being about trust, I just always find that very funny, going past the Labour hoardings with the most astonishingly dishonest political mugshot of all time. I mean, that isn't Helen Clark up on those billboards, is it? At least the rest of them are reasonably honest.
Yeah, but the rest of them are, you know, reasonably easy to photograph. Now, you imagine they probably looked for the best picture they could find, you know, so fair enough.
And then photoshopped the hell out of it.
They say they didn't.
What about the billboards? There's quite a few commentators are saying, well, as far as billboards go, the Greens have hit the mark.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, the best.
Yeah, if it comes to who ran the most elegant campaign, the Greens, by far.
I think the National Party campaign is incredibly boring. That they must have paid good money for their billboards and just like no imagination or creativity at all. I think they're taking the sleepwalking to victory thing too far. Yeah.
Mm. But then again, do National really want to get in this time? If they win this time round, the chances of them being a one-term government are fairly high because they're going to have to be the party in charge during the next few years as the economic crisis really sinks in. And there's every chance that Labour could come storming back next time and then National are back out again. I mean, the same thing used to happen in Britain a lot when I was growing up. The Conservatives would, now and again, they'd scrape in and I don't think they ever completed a full term in office between about 1946 and 1979. I don't believe they ever went a full term. And I think National could do that this time round. And it's probably one of the reasons they themselves would like to maybe not win this one.
Yeah. But maybe there's a different thing happening here as well, Alan, because you said one of them will be in charge next time, but maybe neither will be in charge. I'm quite impressed with the rise of the smaller parties and with the gap narrowing between the two big ones. The smaller ones are going to have an interesting balancing effect, and you know, how they play it out will be more than interesting. The Greens were polling nearly 10%.
Yeah.
And the Māori get all 7 of their seats.
And on the other side, of course, ACT have never looked as healthy as they are at the moment, even with Roger Douglas there putting the curse on
it. I love the ACT guys. That's about the only humour that's in the election. I mean, the ACT guys denying climate change is part of their policy. You know, like, you can't be that stupid and still hope for so they at least they're going at it with some kind of sense of humour.
But I think, yeah, that which of course brings us to, let's hear it for MMP.
Absolutely.
And I find it upsetting that there still are people going around going, oh well, I don't know about this MMP, I think we should have a referendum and get rid of it, because it was much easier in the old days when you just had two great big fat parties swapping power backwards and forwards between them. Folks, honestly, if you really feel that way about MMP, can I suggest you're probably not up to the job of voting, and stay home next Saturday. Really, just stay home.
Yeah, it's complicated. You know, there's more than two parties, yeah, and the others might give you something interesting to vote for, yeah.
And, I mean, we have got a wealth of other parties, haven't we? I mean, we all know about the Greens and the Māori Party and New Zealand First and United Future. Bless Peter Dunne's haircut. He does turn me off, that guy. But we have a whole lot of others as well.
Yeah, we were just looking at our list this morning. You know, there's the Alliance, bless their socks, the Aotearoa Legalised Cannabis Party. Imagine being number 19 on their list. Mark Bradford, I wish him well. Democrats for Social Credit, the Family Party.
So Social Credit is still around. Yeah, they actually used to get seats in Parliament, you know.
Yeah.
Residents Action Movement, New Zealand Pacific Party, which, of course, that's Taito Phillip Fields attempting to keep things together. The Republic of New Zealand Party.
And Libertarians.
The Workers' Party. Yeah. Oh, now the Libertarians. Oh, dear, oh, dear. I've had a lot to do with the Libertarians, and goodness me, they're a dull lot.
Yeah.
I do agree with a lot of what they stand for, but
I like that they've got a logo with the Statue of Liberty on, which is a bit dubious to start with. And then there's the Bill and Ben Party. I like the sound of them.
Yes, that does sound amusing.
How many votes do you think they'll get?
Well, you have to have 500 members to register a party. Yeah. So I'm always interested to see at the end the parties who don't get 500 votes. Because...
yes.
So you bought some in advance, and you couldn't hang
when
on
it comes to
them.
The day only their mothers.
Where
vote
did the
for
members
them?
Come from? Right, now let's look at the campaigning itself. So, as you said before, what we've had a focus on the leaders themselves doing all of the campaigning. So everyone else is invisible. And National, if anyone else dares to open their mouth and suggest something about policy, then John Key's on 15 minutes later saying, no, that's wrong, this is the policy.
It's not a good look.
You know,
but a lot of the National Party guys get it wrong. I mean, Williamson with...
Well, do you think it is that perhaps they just don't know that the policy is whatever John Key says when his mouth opens, and they're meant to just sit back and wait until he does?
I think there are two elements there. There's one is that they're making a policy on the hoof, trying to outdo each other with bribery, a bit like the Australian elections, which I find a little distasteful. And the other thing is that I think any grouping of people, doesn't matter if they're nuclear physicists or teachers or politicians, any grouping of people in my mind has the same level of incompetence. And the politicians just show it up every time.
Mm.
So, I mean, because we haven't seen the other politicians, we are having to judge it pretty much on the performance of Helen Clark and John Key. Yeah. So how do you think they've gone?
Yes.
Takes a while to answer that.
Oh, right? Yes. Is there anything that really stands out?
Well, if you looked at them in that leaders' debate last week, they were both laughable, really. The lack of decorum, of the trying to shout each other down, that was... It could have. That was pathetic, really.
Yeah, that really nothing worth getting excited about compared to the debate between the smaller parties the week later, which was quite interesting, and there was definitely some cut and thrust. It was worth watching. But as I say, I think it just comes back to the fact that you've got two major parties, neither of which really want to win this one.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's maybe indicative of how boring this campaign has been. The most charismatic element I've found was the little profile on Peter Davis last week. And if he's the most charismatic guy we've got, you know, we're in trouble. Did you see that story in the paper?
No,
there was a story about him catching the bus.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah. And then another story, quite a sympathetic story, actually, by Paul Holmes about him making a curry for Helen last weekend.
Mm.
And those I found quite intriguing.
Do you think the media have got some, you know, got to take some of the blame here?
Oh,
because,
yeah, they're bloody,
you know,
hopeless.
That Mark Sainsbury in that debate where there was all the shouting, I mean, he didn't conduct a debate. I mean, in a lot of ways, I felt like that for that. It was TV1, wasn't it? That they wanted that. They wanted that, yeah, kind of clash, because they figure, well,
they
that's
needed
that's
to put
TV.
A bit of life into this.
Yeah, yeah. I think the media in New Zealand's lost its way a little bit. I mean, we dominated in Auckland by the Herald, which is a terrible paper, and biased, you know, very obviously biased. But the TV guys are trying to just do controversy for controversy's sake, and as you say, didn't get a decent debate out of it. There was a lovely article in the paper Trevor Darville, one of a Waiheke resident, had printed about saying how hard would it have been for TV1 just to have a mute button on the guy's mic, so when Key tried to interject, they just mute him. They couldn't have heard him. It would have been so easy.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw a little bit of the debate between Obama and McCain, and you know, that was completely civilized. They came out, shook hands, sat down, and debated issues.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still a lot of rhetoric, but you could actually hear what they had to say.
Yeah, I really think but I think we've given ourselves New Zealand's got a wonderful heritage in democracy, and we're underselling ourselves this time around, really.
I'd have to say I'm quite impressed with the media in this country. If you look at the coverage, certainly I've spent some time in Australia during election campaigns, and the media coverage there is deplorable compared to here. And certainly if you look at some of the stuff that comes off American television, particularly the Fox network, it's just ghastly. And I think, as far as New Zealand's media is concerned, I think they do quite well.
Yeah. But the Australians do satire much better than us.
Yes.
If you follow an Australian campaign, I was there last time when there was an election campaign, and you follow it through the satire, you know, the Chaser Strikes
Chasers
Back or whatever.
Those
are the guys.
Well, the Americans are doing the same thing, of course, with the Colbert Report and the Daily Show.
Yeah. And that's really lacking here. There is a show on Sunday night, I think, on TV1 called The Pretender,
yes,
which has been quite good. But the problem with
that is... They didn't publicise it. I had no idea it was
on. Not publicised and not being written at the time. So it's all pre-recorded. So they missed... They weren't brave enough to say, let's just hold off on this and write it on the week so we can pull in
the way they
issues.
Used to do with Spin Doctors.
Yeah.
Well, they have... I don't know if you've noticed, they actually have the fake politician from that show is running a political blog in the Herald at the moment on their website. And it is very funny.
Mm. No, I think...
But we could do with a lot more.
You're right. The satire is sadly lacking.
Yeah, I think we take it all too seriously as well, even from within the political system. If politics is meant to encapsulate the whole of the human condition, but it isn't really. If you look at the party lists, they're all waspish middle-aged men and dominated by the legal profession. There are very few humorists amongst the list and very few funny
then
people.
Again, most,
so why aren't they represented?
Because I think in the case of humorists, people with actual talent, why would you be wasting your time in Parliament?
Yeah, yeah.
You'd be out there doing something useful.
Well, I would vote Jermaine Clement or Oscar Keitley or someone like that for PM. I think we'd have a better ride.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at Australia, you've got Peter Garrett from Midnight Oil. There he is in Cabinet.
Yeah. But he's not that funny, is he?
He's not funny.
He is one of the most inspiring public speakers I've ever heard.
Oh, really? I haven't heard of him.
I've seen him in concert many times, and he would have to be one of the only rock singers who could stand there and talk for 10 minutes, and the audience are actually going, well, no, come on, tell us more. Yeah. And it's almost disappointing when the music starts again, because he's a magnificent public speaker.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. My thought about this campaign was that, you know, there's that wonderful quote that politics is show business for the least attractive men. And somehow the show business aspect of this campaign has been least attractive on all fronts, really.
One thing I think, and this is, you know, not for the politicians this time, but I think something that, that we as the electorate ought to be a little bit better behaved about is the defacing of the signage around the place. That really has been appalling this year. And I find that disappointing.
And that's another thing that's happened without humour, really.
There's nothing.
Yes, it's one thing to deface a sign like
that. But you can improve the sign.
But just the defacing of the signs this time around has been mindless.
Yeah.
I think there was, particularly when they first went up, somebody was going around and actually spraying the Labour Party ones with "Vote Green." I mean, nice one, whoever you are that did that. I mean, that really doesn't help, does it?
And I mean, I know, Alex, that you're a fan of guerrilla art.
Yeah.
But have you seen anything that approaches that?
No, it's really sad. Yeah,
the defacing of signs has just been humourless and sad.
But I tell you what, the colour of Waiheke is changing, isn't it? I mean, you know, this election compared to elections in the past, whereas predominantly we might have seen Labour and Green signs, that the national ones are all over.
Well, I think that's probably...
We haven't seen an ACT sign on Waiheke yet. That would have been good to see.
Yes.
I wonder whose property it would be in front of.
Mine.
Well done.
Almost certainly.
You'd have to move to the main road.
Yes, I probably would. No, where was I going with that? The thing with the signage, though, for the National Party, I think with the Nats, it's an interesting choice, of course, with them for the Auckland Central candidate, an untried but obviously very hard-working candidate. And she must have really impressed the National Party hierarchy to be able to contest that one. But I think as far as Waiheke's concerned, National probably putting a bit of effort in to try and get that, you know, the National Party vote on Waiheke into the elusive double figures. You know, that they can dream. Yeah, I think it's, what, about 8 at the moment? The same readership as the Waiheke Week. But, you know, with a bit of effort, I think the National Party are probably thinking they could actually get into double figures.
I think we could see a dramatic change, actually, in the voting figures on Waiheke this time. I think, you know, the demographics have changed and we might no longer be... I mean, it used to be that if you extrapolated the Waiheke vote, you know, Greens would be the majority government. But I think we're going to see a bit of a change.
Yeah. I'm really hoping that the Greens have a strong showing this time around, just to, as Alan was saying earlier, so that the smaller parties have a good representation in the final makeup. And, you know, Maori, ACT, Greens, First, everyone should be in there, I reckon. Why not?
And the candidates, well, I mean, we've got Denise, who's been busy running around. Have you seen much of her campaign effort?
I've seen a fair bit of her her campaigning. I haven't actually run into Denise recently because I must admit, and I'm sure she's heard this from a lot of people, when I saw her running for the Greens, my first thought was, hang on a minute.
Didn't we just vote you in for something else?
Aren't you supposed to be our local councillor? Sure. Here we are dealing with an increasingly corrupt and overbearing Auckland City, and you're taking time out to run a sort of vanity campaign for the Greens. Couldn't somebody else have done that in Auckland Central? I think Denise might have other things that are more pressing on her time.
Yeah, and I wonder if Waiheke could have come up with some very strong Green candidates as well.
Okay, now finally, we're going to finish up in a moment, but have either of you taken a look at the pundit.co.nz website?
Tell us about it.
Well, it's quite amazing, actually. It's borrowed an American idea. So what you do is you go to the site, it's pundit.co.nz. You pick your top issues by assigning points to each issue. Then it gives you a series of questions on those issues that you've selected, weighted according to your points. And you're asked to answer these questions from, you know, strongly opposed to strongly supportive. And then it pops out the parties that
you
your viewpoints
you.
That align with,
which is
quite interesting.
Now, that takes all the emotion out of it.
But
you know?
I think that's the thing nowadays, isn't it? That people are voting purely on emotion rather than what is going to come about when that party wins power. And I mean, I was intrigued. It's recommended that I vote for a party that I never would have contemplated voting for, actually.
Interesting.
But well worth a look, because what it does is it gets to the basis of issues and policies rather than, you know, I like John Key's smile.
Yeah, no, we've got to get beyond that.
Yeah, or not voting for him, he's got a nasty haircut and things like that. Yeah, that's...
But I think if you were to try and vote seriously, you could easily get confused, you know, with National trying to be more Labour than Labour and all that sort of thing. So it does get a bit confusing with policies, and also that some of them are unformed, or as you said earlier, their own politicians don't have them straight themselves, you know.
And do either of you have a ritual, an election day ritual?
Yes.
Did I tell
I thought you might.
Yeah. Get out to vote as early as possible, and then settle down with lots of strong coffee and cigarettes and watch the results coming in.
Yeah.
I love election nights, and anyone at most people know me well enough to stay clear if they don't want to talk politics all night.
Oh, I'd love to be there, yeah. But my problem with watching those TV broadcasts is you get endless banal drivel from sort of grizzled old political commentators. They're usually so wrong that, you know, they predict things and then go, you know, get proven wrong.
Don't you think, though, the lovely thing nowadays, and I mean, it's going to be a great week for me. I mean, yeah. I've taken Wednesday off to sit and watch the American election.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And then I'll spend Saturday evening sitting raging and yelling at the TV at home. It's just going to be fantastic. Yeah. But I think that the beauty of it these days, with the internet and so forth, is that you can absolutely wrap yourself in information. Now, my dad was a political journalist, and his main source of news was the telephone, a landline telephone. That was all he had to work with. It's like, come on, give me information. And you can only talk on one telephone at one time. Whereas journalists nowadays, you could be, I don't know, sitting out in your boat, surrounded with more information than even somebody in a major newsroom 10 or 15 years ago.
And what about you, Alex? How does Election Day roll out for you?
The one thing I'm looking forward to is to see the, you know, when the losing person phones the winning person with the concession phone call.
Yes.
And, you know, going back to Alan's opening comment about the hospital pass election, you could, with a bit of clever satirical script writing, you could write that as quite a nice little phone call.
Yes.
Over to you, you sucker. You want it? You really want it? 3 years of this? Good luck to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Alan Knight, Alex Stone, thank you very much, both of you, for joining us this morning on Island Life. And 1 week to go, next Saturday, Election Day.